This is a podcast from Shooting People.
This is James McGregor talking to Stuart Urban about his documentary on the life of his father, Holocaust and Gulag survivor Gary Urban.
So you made your first film, The Virus of War, when you were, 13 in 1972?
Yes. 13, yes.
Children playing at war. What was it all about?
Well, I suppose it was in no small measure due to the fact my brother and I had found out, you know, some of what had transpired with my father and his family, who mostly killed in the Holocaust, and his brother who had survived and became an underground fighter with the Jewish resistance. You know, this sort of impacted on us, and we were always doing shows and plays and trying to do music or, you know, play instruments, and we thought of trying to combine our supposed skills and do something constructive, and you know, the idea formed with our friends to make a war film with kids playing Nazis.
Okay then, ready? Ready, stand. Stand turnover.
Stand running.
Camera turnover.
Camera running.
Mark it.
Slate X49, take one.
And it was about not so much just a war, but the idea that these Nazis invaded some British islands. And it was actually the Falkland Islands, although I never really realised at the time. Now that I look back on it, working through, you know, some of the sort of great impact of what I found had happened to my father and his family.
Right. It caused a stir at Cannes, of course, didn't it?
Yeah, it was at Cannes. It was sold to many countries. I like to think it was a good film, but it may have been just as much to do with my father's salesman skills, you know, that he would sort of go into a PBS in America and say, I will not leave until you have bought my son's film.
So he's quite a ruthless man.
He wouldn't take no for an answer, put it that way.
Yes.
And he did get some sales to major networks around the world. So,
well, good for him.
Who knows? You know, I wish it were that easy today, you know, to have a dad who'd go out and sell my films. But, you know, it's not...
But has war and political conflict and that sort of thing continued to interest you as a film?
Yeah, I mean, it has. You know, it hasn't done... Not all my work. I mean, my brother was a war correspondent, and he just missed the Benazir bomb. Actually, he travelled back with her to Pakistan and for the BBC Newsnight job that he does. So I suppose we've both been quite interested in that professionally. But I've also done a lot of other subjects as well, regular TV drama subjects, or, you know, comedy drama, or totally different subjects. But yeah, I do keep returning to it somehow.
Oh well, let's turn now to the subject of your film. Your father, he was born where, and can you give us an idea of what happened to him before he finally settled in London?
He was born in eastern Galicia, an area that is now Ukraine, and at that time was, when he was born, it was still in the Austro-Hungarian Empire in 1916, and then was Poland, so the place has changed hands four times in the last 100 years. So what happened was that he got caught up in the beginning of the Second World War in the Nazi invasion. He was actually not in his homeland. He was in Warsaw at that time, or nearer to Warsaw. So he escaped through the Nazi lines and got to the Soviet side, where the Soviets had invaded Poland and eastern Galicia. And that was the beginning of the war for him. Trying to escape from the Russians, he was then shot on the border and sent to the Gulag. And well, he went through a series of kind of helter-skelter ride, really, of the worst and the best of the Soviet system, where he went through several prisons and escapes, and even had a death sentence pronounced. But he was also, at some point, you know, quite high up in organizing health as a doctor, the head of health for a whole big district, and used that position partly, the influence of that position, to get him the connections to escape from the Soviet Union, where he then worked in Venezuela as a doctor and eventually came to England, having retired from medicine, and brought us up here as a family, my my brother and I.
It was a frosty, very frosty day. Very cold, very windy and very cold and full of snow. I just jumped over and started to run. They shot at me. I was wounded. I was in the water. And they say, he's dead. I said, no, Tavarish, I'm not dead. So he said, what kind of bloody Tavarish are you from us? You're escaping from us. And when they take me out, they want to hit me. Then I, with my standing up, with my head, I hit him. And then they brought me to the head office of the KGB.
So had you always been aware of the fact that he had led such an unusual life?
I think it became apparent when we were old enough to understand. But I do, you know, sort of maybe, you know, 9, 10. But I don't remember the exact moment. But I do remember how he found the you know, the only survivor of his family. I still remember that when I was 6 or so, when a telegram arrived from Israel that the brother, a brother, because he didn't know who of all his brothers and sisters and big family had survived. He thought they were all dead. The telegram arrived, and it was clearly the same. He named in the telegram the mother's pet names for each of the brothers and sisters, and it was a big moment, and they were all the correct names. So my father, you know, sort of grabbed his suitcase and went on the next plane.
Wonderful. What an astonishing thing to happen.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, when did you decide that you wanted to make a film about your father?
Well, I suppose, you know, I was always wanting to be a filmmaker, and it was always I was always wanting to make a movie about my dad. But, you know, when I say a movie, I mean, the documentary is as much a movie as a drama. But I wanted to make a dramatized film, but I realized that, you know, this enterprise would be such a big budget. You know, and it's still a film I want to make, but, I mean, I had wanted to do this from probably around the time his book came out, really, when I was about 20, and, you know, wanting to be a filmmaker and think one day I'll make a movie of it. Obviously, being a sort of junior filmmaker, it wasn't really a possibility to make such a big-scale film. And then I had done a couple of bigger TV dramas, started to do feature films as a director, and have always been wanting to do it. I've had various actors interested and to play his former fiancé, Knocker. I had Liv Tyler interested in that role. I never really managed to find someone to play my dad so far at the right age and who wanted to do it. But so I thought, well, to hell with this. Why don't I, you know, put together a documentary about him, because I filmed on my researches and travels with him going around all these amazing places where he was imprisoned or tortured or escaped or shot, and where there were joyous events as well as bad, and where he had his childhood. And so I thought, well, I've shot all this stuff, you know, maybe I can make it into a documentary when I found out more about my father, whose life was very mysterious in many respects. And that was very apparent to me, that although he'd written a book about himself that was a bestseller in many countries and a great book in many respects, but equally it left a lot unanswered and was his kind of official version of what happened to him, I wanted to delve deeper myself.
So when you announced this to him, that you'd like to make this film about him, how did you actually feel about that?
He had sort of mixed views, like everything in our, you know, my brother and I, you know, in growing up. I mean, he was a very demanding and pushy father in some respects, you know, always expecting the highest standards, you know, of everything, you know, like we had to get the top marks, we had to get this, we had to get into, you know, good universities, and we had to get the first class degrees, and all this pressure was always on us. But equally, sort of, you know, he would do us down at other times. So it was like he was ambivalent about whether I should make a film about him, as in a movie, because there was interest at various times from some quite well-known. I mean, Costa Gavras was some kind of point interested in the book, and various other people were interested, but never came to anything, you see, you know, because obviously to get any film made, there has to be a sort of passionate interest from whoever it is, the producer or director, to get it made.
Well, you could always send a copy of your documentary to Harvey Weinstein.
Yeah, well, I could. I think my agent has probably sent one, but, I mean, I don't know if he'll ever get to it. But, the other guy who was interested at some point was Andrei Konchalovsky. And so, you know, there were various people interested, but they never came to anything. Sense of not getting it really nearly to the point of making it. And then I got development money from the BBC, BBC Films, and then a few years later, media program, EU media program. So with that money, I was able to travel around, do the research, film myself and my father on the road in this amazing tour of where he'd been in prison, where he'd escaped, trying to get his files, demanding his files, and ourselves getting into a bit of hot water as we went round to these places.
This is James McGregor. For more podcasts, go to shootingpeople.org/podcasts. Now back to Stuart Urban.
I suppose in a way you couldn't have made the film before, say, about 1991 or 92, when the Iron Curtain finally gave way.
Correct. Before that time, it was only just flirting with the idea of what could we do to make the film. There were people interested, but the only real possibility of making the film was, well, in my eyes, when I started, thought, oh, gosh, I could maybe make it, was when I was, you know, had done a couple of things. I'd done my first successful full-length TV drama and had won a BAFTA, and, you know, but I could go out and ask for money, and seriously ask for money to try and direct a movie. But, of course, it's never as easy as that. But at that time, the communists had fallen, and it seemed like you could go in and maybe make a film in Russia. I did know someone who, when he made a film, and he went through all the sort of horrors of mafia interference, having the camera or negative kidnapped at various points. And so it wasn't going to be easy, you know. That is absolutely right.
Yes.
At that point, could you really, A, find out the truth and find out, you know, who were some of the real people, other people in his story, what could be found in the way of evidence for his story? Because until that time, his book had been published, but there was no corroborating evidence. We found the corroborating evidence. Actual KGB files and mugshots and so on and so forth.
Well, when you planned to film with Gary, you knew that you'd be filming your father as well as a documentary subject. I mean, that's a possible conflict, isn't it? And how did you plan to reconcile that conflict?
Yes. Once you point a camera at someone, anything can happen. It's like once you point a camera, it's the same as like if you aim a gun or pull out a gun at someone. You know, you give the other person the right to pull a gun, and you know, all bets are off. So I didn't know what would happen. I certainly didn't know when I started filming these tours, you know, like a video diary, that it could perhaps form the basis of a documentary. I was just thinking them as proof of what we were doing, notes of what we were doing, seeing how my father's character worked in these situations, which was very illuminating. And, you know, proof. Because we went off, we didn't know what would happen. You know, we were going into Uzbekistan, for example, still a very hardline state today, where people, you know, do disappear. And while I didn't think it was probable that we would, you know, that I would be harmed, but I certainly thought it was possible my father might be detained and thrown into jail. So it was kind of like, you know, proving what we were doing, and I didn't know how he would react. And of course, he was at some points. As people see the film, he was very difficult about certain things. It was not a case of just being a docile or cooperative subject for a film. He wouldn't necessarily, you know, he said a lot of really amazing things. He did a lot of really amazing things in the course of making the film, but equally, you know, the film is a kind of probing examination of his life. Our relationship is part of that, but most of all, it's kind of, who is the man?
Indeed, I mean, he actually, at one point, expresses some feelings about filming and documentary work when he's on camera, and he's conscious of being on camera when he says it. I mean,
yes.
Kind of deliberate, wasn't it? I mean,
well, he said, at one point, he just got out of the KGB, or what was the Uzbek Security Service now, what was the KGB building in Tashkent, and he said to the camera, "I'm doing this all for you." You know, i.e. could have maybe not got out, you know, and he was feeling thoroughly sick and fed up with these people.
"I'm doing this for you, my son. And only for love to you, I go to this all sacrifice here. I work very hard. I just want to beg you, you shall not take more of my good heart advantage. Take into consideration my age, take into consideration my feelings when I go to this beast, I become another man. You know how I become."
There were interesting observations from him, kind of on the road, about the very process of making the film and the dangers it exposed us to, or certainly, if not dangers, then, you know, deep stress for him. And, you know, this is very tough to go to a cemetery where, you know, hundreds of, certainly tens of thousands of Jews were slaughtered, and he knew his family had probably been killed there, and because they'd all disappeared from the town at that time, and bullet holes in the graves, you know, it's just very stressful, bones sticking out of the earth.
This interview with Stuart Urban continues in part two, Going Back. This Shooting People podcast is a Digital Imagineering production.
This is a podcast from Shooting People.